If you want to go green, you first need to be conscious. So welcome to Conscious Lifestyles with Ginger Leilani Chapin.
Hey there, welcome to the show this week. I am talking with Camilla Fox. She is the founder and executive director of Project Coyote. You can check them out on projectcoyote.org. I am a huge coyote lover. In fact, you know what? We have some coyotes that visit us on our back porch at night, and they are beautiful. I just love to watch them. You know, they're just incredibly intelligent, and they look much like dogs to me. So welcome, Camilla Fox, to the show. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Wonderful to be with you.
Well, tell us about your organization, Project Coyote, and why it's so important for people to pay attention to your messages.
Yeah, so we're a national nonprofit organization based in Northern California, and essentially our mission is to promote coexistence between people and wildlife through education, science, and advocacy. And we do a lot more than just coyotes, but I chose the coyote as our icon or flagship species because they're really the most persecuted, misunderstood, maligned native carnivore in North America. And we estimate that we kill at least 500,000 coyotes every year in the U.S. alone, and that's by our federal government through the USDA Wildlife Services Program, by trappers, hunters, ranchers. They are considered, unfortunately, in a lot of communities, vermin. And for that reason, we chose the coyote as our icon because we truly believe that if we can shift the way we view and treat coyotes, we can shift the way we view and treat other predators and really all wildlife.
You know, and I live in a very wild area, and I don't have any problems with wildlife. I celebrate them. I love the raccoons. I love the coyotes, like I was saying. They come and, you know, they every once in a while trot through my back patio area. And everybody in my household is really hushed to a silence. It's beautiful. They're gorgeous. And, you know, we live in harmony. That's what Conscious Lifestyles is all about, living in harmony with your environment. There's no problem for us. And I have 8 cats. My cats do not go outside. Cats are not supposed to go outside, by the way, everybody. It's really not a big deal for anybody. So I don't understand why they're so persecuted. Is it the ranchers who are behind this?
Well, part of the problem is that really since we stepped foot on this continent, we have viewed predators as something to be controlled, dominated, killed, and as a threat to livestock and as a threat also to species humans hunt for game. So for over 2 centuries, we have persecuted pretty much all predators in North America. And, of course, we extirpated many of the larger carnivores in on the eastern seaboard shortly after colonization of this continent. So the mountain lions and wolves and bears that used to exist on the east were extirpated. And then it was in the 1600s when Lewis and Clark encountered the first coyotes out in the prairie west. At that time, they called them prairie wolf. And similarly, the same kind of vilification of predators in the eastern seaboard was carried out against coyotes further west. And unfortunately, that perspective has persisted, and it's not everywhere. You know, we see a lot of people like you who appreciate the presence of coyotes, but unfortunately, the negative perspective persists largely out west, where, you know, there are a lot of conflicts with agricultural interests. And so that's one of the reasons why, as an organization, we really promote coexistence and show communities, whether they're rural communities or urban communities, how to coexist with this native carnivore and how to coexist with other predators as well. Because really, when people adopt the coexistence programs that we offer for coyotes, they're really adopting a program that's about coexisting with other wildlife as well.
Well, I was reading on your website, projectcoyote.org, and it's a fascinating website because it takes you to other websites that really give you very explicit videos and understanding of what's really happening in America today. And it's shocking to most of us who are educated and who work in different fields that don't require us to think about this. But it's just unbelievable to me. I was reading on your website that Nevada did they ban coyote killing contests?
No, actually, that was California. So California, December 3rd, 2014, became the first state in the nation to officially ban the killing of most wildlife for prizes and inducements. And I say most wildlife because there are some caveats for some species, fish, various bird species. But for the predators and other terrestrial mammals, we did get a ban enacted on the killing of these animals for prizes and inducements. So most people are shocked to learn that this practice is legal across most of North America, and that our state laws allow it, and that, you know, these practices where prizes such as belt buckles and guns are given for those who kill the most animals or the largest. And these happen all over North America, not just in the West, but also places like Pennsylvania, New York. They're happening. And so what we're up against is the fact that most people are unaware of this practice. So we're really trying to use all mechanisms to show people that this is going on and show our policymakers that this is going on, because most also have no idea that this is happening and that it's legal. And then the next process is actually enacting a ban like we did in California.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as I was saying earlier, most Americans are very hardworking and they don't have anything to do with any of these practices, these horrific killing practices that really are so ignorant, it's beyond belief to most of us. So when you read about it and you hear about it and you say, wait a minute, our government is actually supporting this with our tax dollars? How can this be? You know?
Well, and it also reflects what's wrong with our state wildlife agency management practices, because that same perspective that has viewed predators as something to be managed and controlled is still at the basis of the approach of most state wildlife agencies. So we're up against agencies that have regulations and laws in place that allow the unlimited killing of predators, and so hence allow these abhorrent practices like killing contests. So that's another part of this that we are trying to expose, is the fact that we have these arcane laws on the books that allow, for example, for coyotes to be killed 24/7 in unlimited numbers in many, many states. And so a first part of that for us is exposure, showing people that this is happening, and then secondly, enacting bans like we've done in California. And you mentioned Nevada, and so what has happened in Nevada is a similar attempt to ban specifically coyote killing contests in that state. And so we've worked with various advocates in Nevada to push this before the commission to enact a similar kind of ban as we did in California. But again, we're up against these commissions, these state wildlife agency commissions, that have historically had a vested interest of treating these animals as vermin or as a resource for hunters and ranchers. And so, you know, big picture is that we have to change the laws and the regulations to better protect these animals and to recognize the ecological value that they have, because that's another key component here, is that when you look at coyotes and wolves and mountain lions and bears, we have learned in the last 20 or 30 years of research that they are incredibly important to healthy ecosystems. That's aside from their intrinsic value, which, of course, you and I recognize that they have worth in and of themselves and don't have to have value to humans. But that said, they do have an incredible ecological value to maintaining healthy and resilient ecosystems. And that is something that we are pressing for with our state wildlife agencies, is to really acknowledge and include that valuation in how we coexist with these animals.
Yeah, and you know, when I was on your website, projectcoyote.org, it also took me to fairwarning.org, which was very interesting. There are West Texas big bobcat kills, and one just took place in February of this year, and there was a $76,000 prize money. Where does that prize money come from? And as I started to read Bridget Huber's chronicles on this, it comes from the ranchers.
Exactly. So unfortunately, you know, we see this sort of network throughout the West of these associations called Varmint Callers Associations that work with ranchers and essentially promote these killing contests on ranch lands with the argument that somehow these contests are going to reduce conflicts between livestock and predators, when in fact we know from the scientific research that indiscriminately killing predators does not reduce conflicts, nor does it generally reduce the populations of these species. But still, that mentality persists, and these kinds of killing contests that are done, you know, at the behest of ranchers persist throughout the West.
And we've got to go to a quick break. We'll be right back. This is Conscious Lifestyles. Hey there, welcome back to Conscious Lifestyles. This is Ginger Leilani Chapin. Today I'm talking with Camilla Fox. She is the founder and executive director of ProjectCoyote.org. Please check it out. Really educate your children and educate yourself. Most of us are horrified to find out that this is going on in our last remaining wild places, and we don't have a lot of wildlife left. What is this doing to our ecology? What is this doing to our water quality, our air quality, our trees and our forests? We need the full ecology to be working in synchronicity. And if we start to kill off all of our predators and all of our wildlife, what's going to happen? You know, Camilla, I saw your actor and activist, Peter Coyote, on a video on your website. He was so elegant in how he spoke about Project Coyote. Does Peter Coyote work with Project Coyote?
He is on our advisory board and definitely a spokesperson for our organization. And really, he's, you know, not only a world-famous narrator and actor, but he's also a real conservationist. And he lives in the same town that we are headquartered, Mill Valley, and really came to know us after seeing our work for several years and came to us and said, "What can I do? I want to help your cause." And, of course, we love his name, which is very appropriate. But he's an incredible ambassador for these species. And he is so eloquent. And, in fact, he's going to be our narrator for a piece that we're doing about wildlife killing contests. We very much, as I mentioned, believe that the first thing that we have to do is expose these atrocities. And so we very much believe that filmmaking and short videos are one of the ways that we can do this. So Peter is putting his name and his voice behind this effort, and we will be launching a crowdsource funding program in the next couple of months to raise the funds to be able to produce this this short film so that we can expose this and make people aware of it and then seek bans.
So the crowdfunding, you will have that on your website, Project Coyote.
We definitely will have that on our website, yes.
Okay, great. Well, you know, I want to give the horrible and very ignorant quote of a guy named Jerry Harrison, who is a West Texas fifth-generation rancher, when he was interviewed by a journalist asking why he organized the big bobcat killing contest. And he put up the $76,000 of prize money, quote-unquote, and you can see the carnage of these animals in the parking lot of a sporting goods store in West Texas. He says, "Coyote contests do a public service by reducing the number of livestock predators and protecting the public from rabies." Oh, that's a big, ridiculous argument they always like to make. Then he goes on to say, he says, "To those who care and are opposed, butt out. It's none of their business. It has nothing to do with them. It's one of the best things about this beautiful state of Texas. We have 100% support from Texas and the local people. If they don't like it, they can just stay away." What do you say to that?
Well, first of all, I would say that when you look at wildlife and you look at who the wildlife belongs to, we have something called the public trust doctrine in North America. And the public trust doctrine essentially says that all of our natural resources, and I say resources for want of a better term, but that's the term that's used, and that includes the wildlife, that, these, they belong to all of us. They're not, you know, not...
private property, right.
Solely owned by certain stakeholders or interest groups, even though they'd like to think that they are. So the public trust doctrine essentially says that these assets are held in the public trust, and it necessitates that our state wildlife agencies and those who are considered these stewards of our wildlife, these are generally the fish and game commissioners of our state wildlife agencies, that they recognize that these our wildlife belongs to all of us. So that kind of claim completely contravenes that that act, and this is a legal act, and it's something that we as an organization, along with many of our allies, are looking at with regard to the legal aspects mm-hmm. of the way that we're treating wildlife, because we actually believe that it very much violates the public trust doctrine, and that we can challenge that. And in fact, in California recently, we have, with several other organizations, we have challenged another agency called USDA Wildlife Services, and this is an agency that also kills predators at the behest of agribusiness and ranchers. And in California, we challenged this agency under the California Environmental Quality Act for essentially not looking at all the repercussions of killing hundreds of thousands of animals at the behest of these ranchers. So we're starting to use these laws, like the public trust doctrine, like the National Environmental Policy Act, like the California Environmental Quality Act, to challenge the way that our state and federal wildlife agencies have been mismanaging our wildlife.
Yeah, and that's putting it lightly, mismanaging. It's really a genocide, and it's taking place with our tax dollars. And, you know, we're supposed to be the land of the free. We're supposed to be a beautiful country that accepts all, yet we have still remained in the dark ages when it comes to protecting our wildlife and certainly our last remaining open spaces and our forests. To me, this is just asinine. I don't understand why this is not at the top of the list of the things of our Congress to be addressing each and every day when they are in session. It's insane to me. And when you just dig a little bit deeper, you see that there's a lot of special interests that are lobbyists in Washington to have their way with this very arcane way of damaging our environment and making it harder for the rest of us to live in unison and in happiness and in some sort of place where we can actually go out and enjoy these animals and this wildlife. So what do you say to all that lobbying?
Well, you've really nailed it, Ginger, and that is the issue of who holds the power you know, at the federal and the state level. And really, you've touched on it, and that is the ag lobby has really had a stranglehold over how our wildlife is treated at a national and a state level. And so when we, for example, look at the wolf wars that are going on right now, and when I say wolf wars, what I mean is that there is a real push to remove federal protections for wolves under the Endangered Species Act. And to essentially what that would do is put management at a state level. And really, when you look at the driving force behind this push to delist wolves and remove federal protections, you see a lot of ag interests mm-hmm. and big agribusiness. So it gets back to the historic perspective of predators as vermin and as something that we need to remove from our land so that we can raise livestock or, you know, hunt species considered game. So this is a real juggernaut. It's very, very challenging when we're trying to shift the paradigm from killing to coexistence. But I will say that we also work with predator-friendly ranchers, and we have a couple actually on our advisory board. And these are ranchers who recognize the value of having predators on their farms. They recognize that, for example, coyotes and bobcats provide free rodent control.
We have to go to a break, Camilla Fox. We'll be right back. This is Conscious Lifestyles. Hey there, welcome back to Conscious Lifestyles. This is Ginger Leilani Chapin. I am talking with Project Coyote today. Please check them out, projectcoyote.org. Really educate yourself about how our tax dollars are being squandered to kill off our wildlife and thus our natural landscape that is so precious to our quality of life. I just cannot believe what's going on. You were talking earlier before we went to a break, Camilla, about the eco-friendly ranchers and those who are trying to be a voice and saying, look, we can live in harmony and still be a rancher at the same time. Talk about that.
Right. So what we're seeing is an increasing number of what we call predator-friendly ranchers who are speaking out to say that the status quo of indiscriminately killing predators is not only ecologically unjustifiable, but also ethically. So it's refreshing to see that there are ranchers who recognize this, and we are working with them because we very much believe that their voice is important in shifting this paradigm away from killing. We had several ranchers who spoke out, for example, in favor of the killing contest ban in California, and their voices were very influential and powerful. So we do believe that we can coexist. We can have ranchers at the table and find common ground. And, in fact, here in Marin County, which is where we're headquartered, just north of San Francisco, we shifted away from the USDA Wildlife Services Predator Control Program. This is the agency I mentioned before that kills more than a million animals every year at taxpayer expense. And our community here in Marin decided to essentially boot Wildlife Services out after tremendous controversy over the killing of predators with poisons and traps and snares, which is what this agency does as status quo. And the county decided instead to adopt a non-lethal program, and that non-lethal cost-share program essentially assists ranchers with implementation of non-lethal methods. So, for example, instead of using leg hole traps or poisons to kill coyotes and bobcats and foxes, the program assists ranchers with adopting livestock guard animals like llamas and donkeys and improving their fencing and creating things like night corrals to protect their livestock. So that's just one example of the ways that we are creating models of coexistence and finding common ground with those who sometimes we haven't seen eye to eye with historically.
Mm-hmm. Well, obviously, we have a big problem with the way the status quo is currently. And there cannot be enough documentaries showing the harm that these leg hole traps are doing, the poisoning, which is indiscriminate. They're both indiscriminate. And, you know, when I was on your website, it also took me to other websites that showed people's dogs and cats being completely mutilated and killed, domestic animals being killed by these poisons as well as by these leg hole traps. Why are we still behind? What year are we in? 2015. Why are we acting like we're in the 1700s or 1800s at this point?
Well, the various methods that you mentioned, the leg hole traps, the poisons, again, reflect that that control by the ag industry. Because when we look at who is using those the most in this country, who is using the leg hole traps, who are using these poisons to kill predators, it is this federal U.S. Department of Agriculture's Wildlife Services agency. And this is an agency that has been around since 1931, since passage of the Animal Damage Control Act. That act essentially authorizes the Secretary of Agriculture to use any method to control animals deemed a threat to agriculture. And what that's translated to is the use of these indiscriminate tools like leg hole traps, snares, poisons, aerial gunning that are used to prophylactically go out and kill predators before, for example, lambing season. And this is something that you and I subsidize to the tune of over $100 million every year of U.S. tax dollars that go to subsidize this agency. And it circles back to that power of the ag industry. And it's ironic because when you look globally, more than 80 countries have banned the leg hole trap, including the entire European Union. many of those countries have banned this practice, this method, this indiscriminate tool, because they've recognized how unethical it is and how non-selective it is, killing pets and endangered species, and yet it continues to be one of the tools of choice by our federal government. So we're trying to shift that, and we're trying to create ways so that we can make that shift away from these indiscriminate killing methods.
Well, I really support you on that, and everyone should really check out ProjectCoyote.org. We are talking with the founder and executive director, Camilla Fox, today. You know, I am completely outraged when I see these videos, and now journalists are calling them thrill killers. They really are psychopathic, sociopathic individuals to me, and their killing is disguised as a public service, and that's how they actually justify it to journalists who interview them, like the Jeremy Harrison I just quoted a while ago on my show. What is going on? Why is this thrill killing? Why do they go into a frenzy? It's almost like this is something that gives them a sense of a high or a purpose in their lives, which is really scary to me. I don't want that kind of a person in my community.
Again, Ginger, you have nailed it. I was just talking to a reporter about this very issue, and I think there is a sociopathic element here with some of the people who really enjoy gratuitous slaughter, genocide, as you use the term, because really there's no purpose to this killing. The fact that there are prizes awarded for the most animals killed or the largest. We've had private investigators who have gone out on these killing contests, thrill kills, and it is really, it's scary to see the kind of mentality that is attracted to this. I will say on a positive note that, you know, as a nation, we have banned dogfighting and we have banned cockfighting, also similar kinds of blood sports that were finally deemed by our nation as unacceptable. And that took a state-by-state effort. And for example, in New Mexico, that took 18 years to finally ban the practice. New Mexico was one of the last holdouts for that practice. This last year, we, with a coalition of organizations, we introduced legislation to ban coyote killing contests in New Mexico. It passed the full Senate. Unfortunately, it died in the House Ag Committee, again, showing the control of the ag industry on these kinds of issues. But we're making headway. The fact that we got through the Senate there, you know, that's just the beginning. And I do believe, like cockfighting and dogfighting, we will bring a ban to killing contests.
Well, I think what is working in your favor and in the favor of the majority of Americans, because the majority of Americans have been polled by very well-known polling agencies to be for conservation. They do not want this killing. So I think what works in your favor is getting this out to the media, you know, and that's why it's my pleasure to have Project Coyote on my show, because I want people to understand that your tax dollars are being squandered. They're being mismanaged, to say the least, to kill our last remaining wildlife that are already imperiled. We have too many people. Our cities have expanded and encroached upon their wild lands. And, you know, where does this ever end? You know, that's the question that I think a lot of us have. And then I know that a lot of ranchers probably look at someone like you living and working in Marin County outside of San Francisco saying, well, you're just an intellectual. You're not one of us. You're not a rancher. You don't know how hard it is out here. And, you know, go back to your books and go back to your intellectual life. You don't know anything about this. And I'm sure you've been accused of that.
We have, but we also have two predator-friendly ranchers on our advisory board who are out there, you know, doing the hard grunt work every day. And they are able to come to, you know, these agency meetings and speak before other ranchers and say that, you know, these things are not acceptable. And we have learned, fifth-generation ranchers, how to coexist. We can do it. And their voices are very influential. So while I may be, you know, called an intellectual, and I've surrounded myself by those people who are really out there, who have a lot of credibility with some of these constituencies. So that's why I think that we've been quite effective in what we do.
Well, before we go to a break, and we'll come back to this, you were talking earlier and you touched on it. Are wolves good for business? Are these wolves and coyotes and wonderful wildlife, are they good for business?
Absolutely. I mean, that's one of the things that we point to with our state and federal agencies is when you look at, for example, the money that wolves in Yellowstone have brought in since wolves were reintroduced in 1995 and 96, they have brought millions into the local and state economy there. And that's just one example. So we know that there's a growing trend towards wildlife watching, towards wildlife appreciation, and we see this every 5 years. Our U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service does a survey, a national survey, of looking at these trends of what we call consumptive and non-consumptive wildlife uses. Consumptive uses meaning hunting, trapping, fishing, non-consumptive.
We've got to go to a quick break. We'll be right back. This is Conscious Lifestyles. Hey there, welcome back to Conscious Lifestyles. Today we are talking with Camilla Fox. She is the founder and executive director of ProjectCoyote.org. I really urge everyone listening today to please take action for our last remaining wildlife and wild lands. They are disappearing, unfortunately, with our tax dollars, which is just so surprising and shocking to most of us. I'm sorry, I had to interrupt you earlier, Camilla, before we had to go to a break. You were talking earlier. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just mentioning that, you know, the value of wildlife alive versus dead. So, for example, the life of, in California right now, we're working with several organizations to push for a ban on bobcat trapping. And one of the arguments that we're making is that when you look at the value of a bobcat alive over the course of its life, in terms of bringing revenue, for example, for wildlife watching activities, mm-hmm. compared to, you know, the value of one pelt of a bobcat sold into the international fur market, it's so much more over the course of that animal's lifetime. So I think that our state and federal wildlife agencies haven't tapped into this monetary resource, if you will, of wildlife watching, because this is a growing activity in North America, from bird watching to wildlife watching, and it's one that could be so lucrative for state wildlife agencies and that would recognize the value of these animals throughout the course of their lives as opposed to one trophy.
Oh, yeah. You could have these dude ranches. I went to Africa on safari with my husband several years ago, and those are very, very expensive. And people will pay a lot of money to go see wildlife in their natural habitats and live in, you know, these, well, they call them camps out in Africa. But, you know, for us, it would be more like a dude ranch where you'd go to a dude ranch and you'd ride horses and you'd go out and see the wildlife, you know, going on like a photographic safari. And it's amazing. I mean, everybody on the safari just comes to a hush when you come across a lion or an elephant. And it's an unforgettable experience, because I think when you are close to nature, not only do you de-stress, but it's also healing for the body and the mind and the spirit, which is what Conscious Lifestyles is all about. And it gets you in touch with how important it is to preserve this garden. You know, we've got things that can cure cancer and cure diabetes right in God's garden that are being destroyed if you destroy the all the flora and the fauna that go along with it.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I'll say, too, my experience in Yellowstone recently, it's I met several burly men out there with their huge lenses. And several of them were former hunters, and they had given up the gun for the camera. Mm. And they talked about their experience making that shift and how, I mean, it almost brought tears to my eyes just hearing about the experience that they have of going out and going out early in the morning to go photograph a wolf or a coyote or an elk instead of shooting it. And the joy that that gave to them, and then the joy that it gave to them to bring their kids and their grandkids. And that's the kind of shift that we want to promote, the valuing the wild animals with whom we cohabitate on this earth for their intrinsic worth, mm-hmm. for the beauty that they provide to us.
And the healing, you know, because you can't have the yin and the yang without having one part of that. It goes together. It's the circle of life. And I think a lot of us have been detached from that because a lot of people live in suburbs in the cities and they don't know what's going on. They just simply do not know that our tax dollars are being wasted on these horrifically bloody programs. And if anyone wants to go check out, please go look at projectcoyote.org. It will take you to other sites like fairwarning.org, and you'll see these huge trailer trucks filled with dead animals, our beautiful animals that I would pay a whole lot of money to go on safari and see with children, with my family, because I know that not only are they healing for me to be around, but they're healing for the environment. You know, they're when they eat something or when they forage, all of that has a place in how clean our water is, how clean our air is. And there's a real disconnection there with these ranchers. They just don't get it.
Absolutely. And you touched on also the, you know, the disconnect that we have as we become more urban. And that's another thing, you know, Project Coyote, in addition to trying to stop these abhorrent practices and the way that we treat wildlife, we're also trying to create models of coexistence and to reach urban youth, for example, with the wild, to reconnect them with what's, you know, provides our sustenance and our longevity, but also with the wild creatures with whom we coexist on this planet. So we have an educational program, Keeping It Wild, where we work with educators and we work with youth to reconnect and rekindle that nature connection. So, for example, we have some young kids from the Fairfax Manor School who are 9 and 10 years old who are coming out this Thursday to come testify before our California Fish and Game Commission in support of this proposed ban on bobcat trapping. And that's just one example how this educator is working with us to get her kids involved with conservation. They've written letters to the commission. Now they're going to come testify. And that's the kind of thing that we believe is absolutely essential to ensure that the next generation protects this planet.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think you are right. These animals are so good for business. And think of all the revenue and all the opportunities for education all balled into one that our government will no longer be squandering $100 million plus of our dollars a year. And we won't have these killing carnage contests. We will have a world of peace, I think, if we can just look at this from a sensible perspective and say, you know what, does it make business sense to be killing these animals when we can have tourists from all over the world and children and families who from all spectrums of life, whether they be super wealthy or working class, to come and enjoy and pay for seeing these beautiful animals?
Exactly. And you mentioned Africa, you know, and one of the amazing things that many of the countries have done over there is to to work with former poachers and get those poachers to actually be the leaders of these safari trips. And because these poachers are quite knowledgeable about wildlife and tracking, they have completely changed the economy for these people who sometimes get into poaching because they're impoverished themselves. And they are now employing them as leaders of ecotourism. So I think that that's just one example of how we can shift this mentality away from the killing, away from the poaching, and shift it to something where we actually value the animals.
Thank you. Thank you, Camilla Fox. God bless everybody.